So I'm going to introduce the first speech of the day. And during the time that I've known Mark, there's been a couple of moments where it's really sort of hit me in the chest and I've been absolutely blown away by his performance and things that he's done. One of those was when he debated for Jewish gentlemen, 4-on-1, the Israel advocacy movement, and he beat them so hard that day that one of them rage quit. Another one was when we sat in a hotel room opposite from one of the top journalists in the country, Dominic Kennedy at the Times, and Mark just batted away every single accusation that he threw at us. That investigation was a very expensive investigation and a very long investigation for the Times, but the only result at the end of it, because of Mark's performance, was that Mark's following grew and his book became a number one bestseller on Amazon. What Mark's done with Patriotic Alternative in just over 2 years is absolutely incredible. We're no longer just passing around ideas on the internet and pointing things out. We're now engaging in decisive action in the streets. So I'd like to welcome for the first speaker today a man of incredible intellect, a man of incredible integrity, because he's been doing this for 2 decades and he's never once compromised, and a man of incredible strength because he takes so much for us, he really does. Please welcome Mark Collett.
Thank you so much. Now, usually when I get up at one of these conferences to make an opening speech, I try to talk about something organisationally important. Now, at the first conference, I spoke about attracting the right kind of people, or more importantly, keeping that guy out of these meetings. At the second conference, I spoke about creating an environment where people felt safe and comfortable, a place where we could all freely express our opinions. And at the last conference, I spoke about the many victories that we've won over the 2 short years of our existence. But today, I want to talk about something very different, something that isn't organizational. I want to talk about the kind of world that we want to live in. Now, the obvious glaring answer to that is we want to live in a world where nations are overwhelmingly homogenous. We want a world of ethnostates, a world where different ethnic groups peacefully separate, take their destiny into their own hands, and shape their homelands in their own image, putting their own culture, traditions, and histories at the center of their vision for growth and prosperity. In other words, we want a world that rejects globalism and multiculturalism. And the irony of that statement is that such a world would be one of genuine diversity. It would be a world where different cultures thrived, rather than forcing one another to the point of extinction. Yet those who claim to love diversity the most, those who constantly tell us that they are promoting diversity, those who love to tell us that diversity is our greatest strength, those people are actually creating a globalized world where individual cultures are pitted against one another in multicultural countries in a series of genocidal conflicts for space and resources that will ultimately result in the very opposite of diversity. The result will be one cultureless mass of intermixed and rootless people. But when I ask, what kind of nation do we want to live in? The answer is far deeper and far more complex than a simple one-line summary that states we wish for our ethnic group to be a supermajority within our ancestral homeland. So now you know what I want to talk about. I want to tell you why I want to talk about this. You see, over the last 2 years, we have faced an unprecedented attack upon our freedoms and our liberty. This attack came under the guise of the COVID restrictions. restrictions that were sold to the public on the basis that they were for our safety, for our own good. And I'm sure you'll all remember the phrase that was central to that propaganda. That phrase was "stay safe." And the central thrust of that propaganda was that we should be happy to hand away our freedoms for safety. And that being safe was better than being free. Being trapped in our homes, staring out of the window as the days passed by, missing out on life itself, was better than enjoying freedom. Because we were all safe. And crucially, the core of this propaganda heavily implied that freedom itself was unsafe. Now, I don't want to delve too deeply into COVID itself or the real facts surrounding COVID, as after 2 years of talking about it on a weekly basis, I'm actually tiring of the subject. I don't know about you, but I want to get back to business. And when I say business, I mean the business of talking about demographics and informing the public of the fact that the clock is rapidly ticking down when it comes to our status as an ethnic majority in these islands. But COVID was a huge issue. It changed our lives in many ways, and those in the establishment and the media who pushed these changes upon us are the same people who seek to see us reduced to a hated minority within our ancestral homelands. And in short, I believe that the COVID narrative was sold to us for two reasons. Power and profit. We saw massive profits being made by those who were already super rich. We saw an even greater concentration of wealth in the hands of the few. Giant internet companies boomed. Financial institutions like BlackRock gobbled up even more of the housing market. And the pharmaceutical companies were effectively handed a license to print money. What's more, the medical supply companies that all coincidentally seem to have strong links to people within the government, got billions of pounds worth of contracts for materials that were never even used. And sickeningly, many of these supplies were actually destroyed after restrictions ended. And whilst these record profits were being made by giant companies, small businesses and families struggled. Livelihoods were destroyed, and regular folks were forced to sell their homes. And those sad realities were a direct consequence of the COVID restrictions, which were, of course, the power grab. Governments all over the world used COVID as a means to bring in greater surveillance, to road test digital passports, and to coerce people into submitting to systems like track and trace, which allowed watchful eyes to see exactly where any person had been at any given time. People now had to sign in at cinemas, restaurants, pubs, nightclubs. These digital passes were akin to having to show your papers in the Soviet Union. But the level of surveillance that those digital passes provided to the government would have made the Soviet commissars blush. This was, as many people so rightfully stated, COVID-1984. But the point that many people who commented on the COVID tyranny actually missed was that COVID wasn't the beginning of this power grab. It may well have been a drastic acceleration of the power grab, but the power grab was something that began post-Second World War. And this power grab and the surveillance state was something that became more pervasive and more necessary as one particular change took place within Western nations. The change of which I speak of is, of course, the movement toward a multicultural society. And the primary means by which this change took place is, of course, mass immigration. Since 1945, the demographics of the British Isles have rapidly changed. So let's look at the UK figures on demographic replacement, as they are very illuminating. In 1950, there were fewer than 20,000 non-whites in the whole of Britain. And the vast majority of those people were first-generation migrants. In other words, they weren't born here. These people made up just 0.04% of the population. And by 2011, the time of the last census, well, we've had a census since then, but the last census that we have figures for, the non-white population of Britain had risen to over 8 million and accounted for around 13% of the population. To put this into perspective, in just over 60 years, the non-white population of Britain has grown over 400-fold. But as I said earlier, those who claim to love diversity and who constantly tell us they are promoting diversity are actually creating a globalized world where individual cultures are pitted against one another within multicultural nations. And as a result, multicultural nations are ones fraught with conflict, with social disorder, with crime, with inter-ethnic conflict, and a whole host of other social issues. In short, multiculturalism does not strengthen a nation, but in fact, quite the opposite. As the movement towards a multicultural nation intensifies and accelerates, social cohesion breaks down. And as social cohesion breaks down, freedom and liberty are almost always sacrificed in order to hold the declining nation together. As a state moves further toward anarchy, as a result of mass immigration and multiculturalism, the government of that state must employ ever more tyrannical measures in order to hold that state together. And just as we have seen the acceleration of the transition from an ethnically homogenous nation to a multicultural nation, we have seen a correlating acceleration of the loss of our freedoms. We have seen a massive boom in the surveillance state. We have seen the militarization of our police force. And we have seen a massive growth in the powers of the state and the police to monitor every aspect of our lives and pry into our private affairs. And of course, all of this is justified in the name of safety. Because after all, with the acceleration of the transition to a multicultural nation, we saw terrorism, knife crime, social disorder, an increase in the use and sale of drugs. And of course, we saw the mass rape of young girls in towns and cities all over the UK. And sadly, the response to these crimes is never to stop mass immigration or to rethink our transition toward a multicultural state. The response is simply for everyone to hand over more of their rights to the government in order to allow said government to attempt to put a plaster over the problems created as a result of the changing demographics of our nation. And as I was preparing this speech, I remembered some old BNP leaflets that had a curious phrase on them. And that phrase was, "Get Bobby's back on the beat." Now, I look back at that campaign slogan with complete dismay, not least because I have total contempt for the anti-white police who have stood idly by as hundreds of thousands of white girls were sexually abused, raped, and even murdered by men who were largely of migrant descent. But I mean, what would more police on the street have actually achieved? more politically correct foot soldiers to arrest the parents of the girls who actually stood up and tried to stop this scandal. But also, we must ask ourselves a more pressing question. Why do we want police on our streets? Why should we have to walk our children to the park under the watchful eye of law enforcement? Why should we only feel safe to leave our homes if police patrols are active in the area? Why should it be the case that young women feel they need a police escort to walk home after dark? Should we really be striving for a world where we beg for an increasingly heavy and militarized police presence everywhere we go? None of this makes any sense. Quite simply, we should be striving for a society where we don't need roving squads of police officers. A society that doesn't need squad cars driving slowly around our towns and cities and monitoring us. We should be striving for a society where police officers don't look like extras from a 1980s dystopian sci-fi movie. And we should be striving for a world where our police don't need to be standing in public areas guarding monuments and buildings covered in body armor and carrying military-grade weapons that look more suitable for soldiers participating in urban warfare. We should be striving for a better world. But could a peaceful, high-trust, high-IQ society ever exist? A society where we don't need all these police officers and all this surveillance? Well, of course it could. In fact, it did, right here in Britain, before Britain became multicultural. Back before the Second World War, police did not regularly carry weapons. They did not wear military-style clothing. And they did not need to be out in large force constantly in order to maintain what they call a visual presence. There is a clear correlation between the growth of multiculturalism and the level of policing needed to maintain law and order. And this isn't just historical. You don't need to get into a time machine to compare how things were then, when a town was mainly indigenous, and how things are now, when the same town is multicultural. You can do these comparisons in the here and now. Compare any large multicultural city or town that has been demographically transformed with a nearly all-white town or village. Compare the crime rates. Look at the levels of social disorder. And if you still don't find this argument compelling, I urge you, take a walk through both of these contrasting areas at dusk and tell me how you feel. See how comfortable you are in those two settings and which you prefer. You see, the comfort you feel in a white, British, ethnically homogenous town or village comes from the fact you are surrounded by your own. And such a homogenous group creates a harmonious and peaceful community, which makes us feel at ease. However, this is not the case in a multicultural area. To feel comfortable within a multicultural area, you look to the watchful eye of CCTV, or hope to see a police officer or squad car patrolling. Because comfort in those areas does not come from community. It does not come from cohesion. It comes from knowing that someone is watching your back. And when people want someone to watch their back, they sadly turn to the state and the police. So, when people start claiming that the COVID restrictions were the beginning of the end, no, they were not. This surveillance nightmare did not start in 2020 with COVID. It started a long time ago, and as a result of the mass immigration that began following World War II. But the truly sad thing is, many people have embraced this increased surveillance. Many people, including some nationalists, have called for more police on the streets. Even I have in the past. I must have put out tens of thousands of leaflets advocating for a greater police presence. But all of that was so wrong. Because in fact, what we were calling for was an increase in state tyranny as a response to the anarchy created by state multiculturalism. So why am I talking about this? Because I haven't really answered that question. And I've actually managed to say quite a lot without getting to the crux of the matter. Well, today, I wanted to talk about this topic. Because I've recently had some very interesting correspondence from certain well-known and well-respected nationalists who have critiqued my stand on COVID. And one of the main critiques I have received is that my stance was not authoritarian. And as such, my stance was not the stance that a nationalist should take. This critique claimed that my insistence on freedom, liberty, and the rights of our people to resist the COVID restrictions was not a nationalist standpoint, but instead was a libertarian point of view. And indeed, we're not libertarians. We're ethno-nationalists. Well, firstly, I don't think that just because we believe in leadership and certain authoritarian principles that we should blindly support all authoritarianism. Especially when such authoritarianism is being implemented to accelerate the erasure of our people. And secondly, and most fundamentally, my standpoint isn't libertarian. My stance is ethnocentric. We are people of European descent, but more to the point, we are indigenous to the British Isles. These islands are a place which was defined by high trust, high IQ communities, places where neighbours were friends, and communities were like an extended family. Our towns and villages were places where people could leave their doors unlocked when they went to the shops, and our streets were safe for our children to play in unchecked until dusk. We did not need a surveillance state. We did not need constant police patrols or military law enforcement guarding our important buildings and national monuments. Our people were one, and the nation that was born from them was largely peaceful, safe, and a joy to live in. It was a place that was free, a place where people had liberty, a place where people could make choices without an overbearing nanny state butting its nose in. To yearn for our nation to be like that again is not to go soft and become a libertarian, but it in fact is to embrace ethnocentrism. I am not making a libertarian point of view, but a nationalist one. And quite interestingly, if libertarians ever want to actually see the kind of world they claim to desire, they need to wake up and smell the coffee and embrace nationalism. Because the nations characterized by liberty, freedom, and peace were overwhelmingly found in Europe and were the creations of people of European descent. And these places existed pre-World War II, they existed before multiculturalism, and they still exist to this day in the parts of Europe that remain ethnically homogenous and European. And if you ever wondered why the establishment is so desperate to disperse migrants to every last tiny white village and hamlet, no matter how far away they are from Dover, well, That's because the establishment doesn't just want to ensure that we become a hated minority, but the establishment is also hell-bent on ensuring that not a single ethnically homogenous white community continues to exist. This is a war on our people. And this war is not only reducing us to a minority, but it is creating conditions whereby we will lose all of our freedoms along the way. And it is at this juncture we have to ask ourselves, not only what do we want for us, but also what do we want for our children? What kind of world do we want them to grow up in? A world where their every move is monitored by the police and the surveillance state, and that they happily accept such conditions as it's the only way they can possibly feel safe? Or do we want to create something better? A world where safety and liberty and freedom is a way of life, part of the fabric of our society, part of our national character. We should not settle for an existence, either for ourselves or for our children. We should strive for something more. We should make a pledge to our children, a pledge to create a better world. We should dedicate our lives to ensuring that tomorrow we do not merely exist, but instead, we should fight to ensure that tomorrow we live. Thank you.